And welcome to Railway Legends, Myths, and Stories. This is Kuma, and I'm here to talk about trains. Well, I'm not going to talk about a train, but a part of a train this time. I want to go back and look at railway passenger cars. Now, I'm going to mostly focus on North America this time. Sorry about that. I want to come back because the evolution of the railway passenger car in Great Britain, United Kingdom, the islands, is far more fascinating, I think, even than anything America has. And so I'll come back to it. Don't think I'm going to be prejudiced on one side of the pond or the other. Okay, let's roll our old clock back to the fairly early years of the 19th century. Now, I'm talking about 1825, 1830. Now, remember, we were way back in 1904 or so when Richard Trevithick actually had a locomotive, and we just have the opening of some of the Stockton and Darlington railroads. We're still really early in the railway bit here. But in America, the railway carriage. What I'm doing here is going to be really hard on me. I'm trying to do a word picture because I don't have pictures. I might put something up for you to look at, but for the most part, it's my description. Now, at the time of 1830, some of the railway coaches in North America, the United States, for example, looked similar. They were not stagecoaches stuck on railway wheels. I want to make that absolutely clear. They were constructed coaches specifically for the railroad. Now, they look like stagecoaches because that's what the coachmakers knew how to make. And I'll get back to it later. It had to do with the suspension. Believe it or not, there weren't very good springs in 1825, 1830. There just weren't good springs. Not that they got a lot better soon later, and we'll get to that. But let's look at what that coach looks like. That's a very short coach. It sits on four wheels. The wheels are relatively large as they go today. Let's see. The car is maybe 4.5 meters long, has 20 people, carries 20 people. Now, I would say it's about 10 inside, maybe 12 inside, and another 8 on the roof with roof seats. Now, roof seats did not last very long on steam trains. Why? Well, people could look around and everything. No. Even on a very nice day, that steam locomotive was not very far in front of you. It was burning wood. It was burning it very poorly. And a whole string of cinders and sparks were going up that smokestack, and they were raining down on the top of the coaches, and if you were on the top, they were raining down on you, and there was smoke. No. Being outside on the top of the car, no, that was no fun at all. If you're interested and really want to make a quick look, do a search for the movie Our Hospitality with Buster Keaton. You'll see exactly what the coach I'm talking about. Now, at that time, the weight might be 1.5 metric tons. I mean, it's heavy, but it's not all that heavy, all right? And it was made of wood and some iron, no real steel iron. But this, let's be honest, this 1830... So, now, that's not so bad. But within five or so years, this 4.5 meter long coach, which is just one, jumped to over 10 meters long. Over 10 meters long. This was a very long coach. This is as long, actually, it's as long as my travel trailer. Maybe a little longer. All right. Let's look at that a little more carefully as I'm talking about. At that time, just by 1835, they had gone to something called the eight-wheel carriage. Now, eight wheels meant there were four wheels at one end, four wheels at the other, on something that we in America, North America, we call a truck. Most of the world refers to it as a bogey, which is funny because they're also called bogies on airplanes. So where the word truck came from, I'm not sure, because bogey actually fits the bill much better. So what we have here is this small four-wheel arrangement, two axles, four wheels, and it's got a pivot. Now, you might have seen railway carriages. I hope maybe you have. But this little wheel set would allow you to go around fairly tight turns, but hold a very long car. This huge, long car could go around the nice tight turns because the wheels are at one end and these other wheels are at one end, and they pivoted. Great. Well, let's look what happened elsewhere on that. We're going from 20 people, 20 seats, and some of them outside, to 50, more than 50 seats inside. So we've more than doubled the capacity. More than double, I mean double and a half there, because it's 20, now we have 40, no, we have 50. More than 50 seats. But the weight went up. Oh my God, the weight went up. 5.5 tons. Wow. And by the way, that's a wooden car. The axles are iron. The wheels are iron. They're a very special kind of iron. I'll get to that someday. But at the time, these were iron wheels. And there were iron fittings other parts. But the structure of the car was all wood. Wood. So that was the thing. And that was a pretty good carriage. Now, we go forward 15 years here to 1850. Now, the car has really lengthened. It's about 12 and a half meters long. It's much longer. The weight went up quite a bit to like 9 tons. Still, all wood. It does have a little better wheel set. It's got a lot better brakes. Although the brakes, again, are entirely manually operated by somebody turning a wheel at one end of the carriage. Passenger cars weren't so bad because you could walk down the one, jump to the next car, and turn the wheels. So it was a lot easier, and there usually were no more than 3, 4, 5 cars in a passenger train, often 2. Anyway, so we're talking about this 1850 carriage, and it had 56 seats. It could seat 56 people. Well, that sounds really pretty good. The railroad thought this was great, especially if you sold all those tickets. I was making some money. Money. I mean, the whole idea of this was money. Well, what is going to be really surprising to everybody who's listening to me, maybe they aren't surprised. By 1860, only 10 years later, at the dawn of the Civil War, the American Civil War, the carriage had jumped to 16 meters long. It was really long, but only seated 50. It seated fewer passengers. How'd that work out? Well, by that date, by the 1860s, they had loos. They had water closets in the car. I mean, before that, you were only going an hour, maybe an hour and a half in the train. They just didn't have bathrooms. They certainly didn't have them in 1830 or 1835. But by 1860, these cars were going distances where you would be on the train for 4, 5 hours, maybe even 8. Well, a bathroom was just essential. And so that took up room at each end of the carriage. And that design change is true today. Well, not always. I mean, in some of the modern trains I was on in Europe, the bathrooms were in the middle, but that's a triviality. The common design at the time, 1860, was a water closet at one end and one at the other end, and you had the main section with seats. And again, these are wooden cars. They're completely made of wood. Well, yes, there's glass for the windows. There are cloth sashes. There's some horsehair maybe coverings for the seats. There's the iron, of course, of the 8 wheels. Again, it's the same bogey system, 4 and 4. You know, the 4 wheels and 2 axles at one end, and 2 axles and 4 wheels at the other end. Okay, but that meant you only had 50 seats. But the weight jumped to 16 tons. Remember, only 10 years earlier, you're talking about 9 tons. This isn't quite doubling, but it's a big jump in weight. Now, wait a minute. Come on. What's going on? Wait a minute. I will come back to this at another time, but let's just look at some of the things that an 1850 and an 1860 passenger car had that ones in 1835 and 1830 certainly didn't have. Those were day coaches, true day coaches. By 1850, trains ran at night. They were installing, well, either candles or small oil lamps, you know, along inside the carriage to provide light. By 1860, it wasn't uncommon to have a stove at one end of the car or the other. You know, a wood pot-belly stove with a pipe coming out, and you could feed it with wood or, in some areas, coal to heat the carriage. I've been on a carriage like that myself, and it works, but only in one little narrow area. You can't get too close. It's too hot. You can't get too far away. It's too cold. So it's just this one little spot where it's sort of comfy. So a stove, that took weight. By 1860, there was also changes in the roof line. There were changes in the way they did windows. The bogies themselves, these trucks, the parts with the wheels on them, were heavier. Well, I'll give you exact numbers some other time, but they got heavier. So that was part of the weight of the carriage. So we have this big jump in weight from 1850 to 1860. Okay. Now, let's go forward another 20 years or so to 1880. Well, remember, we'd already gotten to 16-ton car. Now the weight has jumped to 22 tons, more than 22 tons. 22 and a half or more tons. You go, oh my gosh, they're getting heavy. And here's the kicker. These cars were longer still. The 1860 was about 16 meters. These are 18. But guess what? They did get more seats back. They're now up to 60 seats. That's good, 60 seats. That's a lot of paying passengers. Now, again, we're still all wood. The structural material is wood. And for carrying that many passengers, that takes a lot of wood. The wood actually adds up to a lot of the weight of the car. Wood is a good material, but it has a certain disadvantages. Now, let's go forward just about 15 years to 1895. We're still in the 19th century. We're still there. And what do we have? The length has jumped to 21 meters or more. 21 meters long. 66 seats. Now, that weird number, you can work it out yourself, because most of the seats were four across. This was true all the way back to about 1835. The 1830 coaches had, I think, four seats, but you got in, there was no center aisle. These, all the things from 1835 all the way up to 1895, and for that matter, every other car I'm talking about in North America, coaches had a center aisle and two seats on one side and two seats on the other. That was a standard. We still use that. Amtrak still does that today on their day coaches, the Superliner coaches that run across North America. Okay. Now, so we're at 66 passengers. Okay, fine. Now, we're going to go up to 1910. Now, this is where it gets really weird, okay? The carriages shorten a bit. They're a little shorter. They're not the full 20-some meters. They're about 18 to 19 meters long. They shorten. But this is the part that really blows my mind. In 1910, they tended to cram the seats as close together as they could get them. Can you get a picture of modern airliner seats? And they suddenly could cram 88 passengers into one of these things, and it weighed 54 tons. 54 tons! And it's a wooden coach. It's still all wood. Well, they were having real trouble making these out of wood. The sides of these carriages were like, if you ever look at a bridge, not a modern concrete bridge, but those old steel bridges, you know, with the truss works and things, that's what the sides of these cars look like under their coverings. There were these diagonal and all sorts of shapes to make it as light as possible, but as strong as possible. So this was one of the things. And of course, there were no supports where the windows were. So it was in the area from under the window to the floor were these trusses that carried the weight of the car. Well, this is now the 20th century, 1910. We're still talking about wooden cars. There were some more metal. The bogies, the trucks, actually got, they should have gotten lighter because they were using steel instead of iron. But the weight had jumped all the way up to 54 tons, so they had to be heavier and stronger to handle the weight. So, you lost it. All right, let's move up to 1925. Now, this is going to be a real hard one to explain, but let me see what I can do. Here's the bit. This is the start of what, in railroad parlances, they call the heavyweight era. This started, started a little after 1915, 1920. But by 1925, it was going strong. It was called the heavyweight era. The cars had risen so much in weight. Now, how much? 63 tons. And we're talking seating 80 passengers. Wow, that's a lot. Now, the weight didn't jump as much as you might think because by 1925 or so, these were steel. Now, the body of the car might still be wood, but it had this steel platform under it. And like a bridge, it was like a bridge underneath. It was this big steel frame under everywhere they sat, and it could handle the weight, no problem. But it sat, if I can get this right, on 12 wheels. There were three axles on this bogey, this truck in the front, and three on the back. So one, two, three axles with a pair of wheels each. So that's six at one end, six at the other. And the car sort of had this droop underneath it. It didn't droop, but it was this they called it fish belly, that was all this steel to help support all this weight. Well, here's another kicker for you. By 1925, they weren't using oil lamps anymore. They weren't using candles. They were using electricity. Now, where did you get the electricity? Well, believe it or not, you got it from generators. Not gasoline, not diesel generators, although that was tried sometimes. But many cars had a generator under the frame using, heaven help me, I'm not joking, belts. Big, huge, wide belts that ran to a pulley section on one of the axles of the rail car and ran over to this generator, which is mounted under the frame. And there were batteries. There were some batteries, believe it or not, to make the lights nice and smooth. And this would charge the batteries and provide the power to run the lights, like the old generator on bicycles once upon a time. So you're going, wow, really? Yeah. And that's another reason for the weight. These had freshwater plumbing for the toilets. They had electric lighting. They had central heating of some sort, whether it was gas or coal or, well, even wood in a few cases, but mostly coal. And they would have radiators with a pumped water system or steam. Steam didn't work so good because you had the problem of freezing, but pressurized water worked really good and it didn't freeze as long as you kept the pressure up. And so all of these systems, these auxiliary systems, you know, lights, heating, water, all this stuff added a bunch of weight. And that's why these things were so darn heavy. I mean, they were heavy, really heavy. Okay. Now, I'm going to jump up the last date I'm going to talk about. Now, for this show, I'm going to go further on other shows, believe me. But we're going to stop at about 1940. just an arbitrary year. I could have picked 1935, maybe. But by 1940, just before the United States entered the war, the carriages were now all steel. All steel construction. I mean, that's the frame that supports it, the sides of the carriage, the inside carriage. They might have some little wood trim still on the inside, like paneling to make it look pretty, but no wood was structural. There was no more wood at all. The 1925 had wood, but they didn't support the car anymore. That was a big frame. But they had gone to all steel. Now, what's funny about that is, they also cut back from these massive number of people. They shortened, the carriages actually got a little longer, you know, but from 24 to 25 or 26 meters long, they were longer. But, people weren't putting up with this cramming people in like sardines. That the railroads had to give up on that. People complained too bitterly, and they couldn't stand the complaints. So the passenger loading dropped back down to around 60 passengers. Some were like 60, 62, 64, but in the low 60s, the low 60 passenger was most carriages. Okay, so the weight dropped from 63 tons down to 50 tons, and that's less than a carriage weighed 30 years earlier in 1910. So they actually lost some weight. And that meant, that you could go back to the four-wheel bogies, which weighed less, which also made the carriage wheels. Wait a minute, what's the big deal? The thing is, the heavier a passenger or any car on a train, the more powerful the locomotive has to be to pull it. Well, remember, I've always said this, railroads are tight-fisted lot. They don't want to spend money on fuel. They don't want a newer locomotive. They don't want, they want some money. They don't want to spend any. So these newer passenger carriers could do two things. They could be pulled by a smaller locomotive, but with the ones they had, if you had these lighter ones, you could go faster. So the speed of some of the trains actually went up. Not dramatically, but they went up. And it was much easier to maintain schedules because the more power you had, the easier it was to go up hills, around lots of curves, and other things that might impede the motion. Great. This was what... And of course, face it, having more space in your seats. If you go and buy a ticket today, and I recommend you do it today or very soon, because Amtrak is planning in the future to phase out the great superliners, which I think, they need new cars. I'm not questioning they need new ones, but they decided not to have these double-deck coaches and big ones. They're going to go to much smaller coaches, and you'll be back to much smaller seats and much more cramped. But if you get on a superliner and you get a regular coach seat, you're going to get a seat that's as big as most first-class seats in the airlines. I mean, you're going to get a seat where you've got room on both sides of you, where you're not touching, and you've got leg room out the yonkles. You have a beautiful leg rest. You have, most of the time, you have a good window. You have a table to run. There's power outlets nearby. You have it, okay? And on a train, getting up and going to the bathroom any old time is not a big deal because a modern superliner has, between 5 and 6 bathrooms, at least 5. So, and if it was busy, go to the next car and use theirs. No big deal. And of course, if you're on a train like the California Zephyr or the Southwest Chief or one of these Western trains, something. There's a snack car in the observation car, which is really has not as nice as seats, but they face better and have bigger windows. And you can go up there and get snacks and sodas and microwave hot dog and microwave pizza. You know, it's kind of lame, but it beats the heck out of just sitting and can make the trip a lot more pleasant. Now, again, those big coaches carry between 62 and 74 passengers, depending upon the configuration, because some of the superliners have seating on the upper level. All of them have seating on the upper, but some have seating on the lower level. Some have extra baggage space. So, and I believe on at least two of the trains, they converted the baggage space into a playroom for kids. You know, they carpeted it and let the kids run around and you know, bounce into soft toys, which is a really big, nice thing for other passengers. Take the kid downstairs and run around, and makes for a much more pleasant environment for everybody. You know, tire the kid out there. Anyhow, I hope I have not overwhelmed people with numbers. That was not my intent. I was simply trying to get a word picture of the fact that over 110 years, 1830 to 1940, that's 110 years, the railway carriage evolved slowly but distinctly. There were distinct improvements every year that you know, every time they came up with one, they jumped from 20 passengers with some outside in the elements to 50 passengers to having things like lighting, ventilation. I mean, believe it or not, by, even 1925, many cars had air conditioning. Between 1920 and 1940, there was a big jump in the number of air-conditioned railway cars, including the famous Super Chief. They had mechanical air conditioning to cross the desert. Eastern Railroad still used pans with ice and that circulated the air. But across the Southwest, that would never work. They put in air conditioning. So somebody traveling in 1936 or 1935 America might not see air conditioning until they got on a train. I'm not joking. Many buildings wouldn't have it, but the railroad carriages had. They were the high tech of their day, and they still to an extent are, but they were the absolute super duper cutting edge of tech. Boy, weren't they? Anyhow, I hope I've sort of bored you or entertained you, I hope entertained you, on the progression of the American passenger railway car. So that'll be all for now. And as I like to always say, I hope, and I really do, it would be nice, I hope to see you on the train. Bye-bye.
VoIP 929.